Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the sixth episode of FS Talks, the podcast that brings you the latest news and chats with industry leaders every week on Friday mornings. Today's podcast is hosted by myself, Phil Creed. I am co-founder and director of FSCom, which is a boutique regulatory advisory firm to the financial services industry. Today, we are joined by Charlie Dillingpole, who is founder and CEO of Comply Advantage. Now, I first met Charlie probably, 6 years ago. Is that right, Charlie?
Yeah, maybe? Exactly.
Right at the start of their journey, probably we met in a hotel before, but we also met again in a slightly dark office near Victoria. And since then, you know, I've had the pleasure to see the company just skyrocket. You know, it's just gone from strength to strength to strength. And it's probably one of the most exciting reg tech companies out there at the minute. Anyway, pleasure to see you, Charlie. How are you?
I'm great. It's month two of lockdown. So I think everyone's slightly itchy. But yeah, apart from that, I'm great. Great to be here, Philip.
Good man. Listen, I wonder for the audience at home, could you introduce yourself in a bit more detail? It'd be lovely to hear a bit more of your story, including your journey, you know, with Market Invoice, and then how you ended up starting Comply Advantage. Where'd that come from?
Yeah, so I guess the genesis of the company was kind of a few different things. So it's my third company. Second company was Market Invoice, so that was a kind of peer-to-peer lending company, taking money off hedge funds, high net worth, and lending it to small companies selling to large corporations, so kind of like SME invoice clients marketplace. And I guess through that, I kind of encountered the risk of taking millions, billions of pounds and circulating it around the financial system, and that was the kind of real up close and personal introduction to money laundering and cash financing. I guess prior to that, my first company, I built kind of data pipelines and a lot of the technology that we use today, I kind of been first exposed to back then. And then I guess JP Morgan, I was working with companies like Reed Elsevier, who own LexisNexis and Reuters and Dow Jones. So
yeah,
I think like in terms of, you know, 2014, was an interesting time in terms of all the banks were offboarding all their high-risk clients, huge fines, and for me it was really obvious that the whole system was broken and there needs to be a better solution.
And I suppose that's what it sounds like, that's the budding shoots at Comply Advantage, right? You know, it's financial crime, your exposure to financial services. So if we start right at the beginning for Comply Advantage, how did you sort of kick off? Like, what was like your MVP?
Yeah, so the first client we had was a payments company opposite the Saudi embassy in Mesa, sending money all over the world to Somalia, Afghanistan, Pakistan, and they were themselves serving 100 other companies. So there were billions of dollars flowing all over the world. So that was the kind of genesis. And then we worked with the Treasury and DFID and all kinds of institutions, HMRC, National Crime Agency, to understand what was happening. So we built a system for that particular company and used that as the kind of foundational platform that we could then go and sell to other companies. So and I guess part of the key system we sold on day one was to build our own database. So rather than using Dow Jones with LexisNexis, we kind of built our own database from scratch. And rather than using hundreds of researchers, we use algorithms, right? So we now have 250 people, the vast majority of which are kind of engineers. So we're taking tens of thousands of data sources that we've mapped and selected and building a database of terrorists, money launderers, criminals, and cartel members, each of which shouldn't be part of your neighborhood's payments company. So
yeah,
that was the kind of MVP basically. But I think we spent a long time refining it, perfecting it, and I think even today it's evolved hugely.
And if you could sum up like what Comply Advantage does in a few words, and not fight financial crime, is it transaction monitoring and database solutions for PEPs and sanctions? What if you're going to write a paragraph on this is Comply Advantage, what is it?
I'd say fundamentally it's a database, like a real-time database of money launderers, terrorists, and criminals. And then that's one way to detect bad people. We also have the kind of transaction monitoring, so it's kind of it's all the processes you need in terms of the onboarding, the ongoing monitoring, and then when the clients start making payments or when they start transacting, it's that holistic understanding of risk across the board that we do.
Brilliant. And we touched on it a wee bit, but you're using like cutting edge tech, right? Which maybe, you know, it's kind of similar in a way to traditional banking and fintechs. It's sort of like traditional data providers use analysts and Comply Advantage uses data scientists and engineers and things like that.
Yeah.
Could you elaborate a wee bit more on sort of the key tech that you use? Is it AI, machine learning, that sort of stuff?
Yeah, so I'd say, whereas say like a traditional company might have like an analyst or 400 analysts who'll build a profile of the leader of Al-Qaeda, what we'll do is we'll go to thousands of sources and pull in information about that person, lots of different sources, like the FBI's wanted list, and then bring that all together, right? So we know his height from this place, we know his IP from this place, we know his connection to that place, right? So we automatically merge everything together in a massive graph, right? So we have all these nodes and the edges and facts about people, right? So, and companies and linkages. So, and I think because of that, we can do things at a scale which wouldn't be feasible if you're using human analysts, as in you couldn't suddenly map and have an objective record and search and traverse a graph of an entity and all their linkages if you're doing it manually, because it would just be too onerous. And also the kind of provenance of the data isn't there, the source of data, the improving algorithms, right? And I think in terms of the specific technology within machine learning, there are various branches. So there's like deep learning, there's natural language processing, and all those kind of techniques, like are kind of like it's not as if one is good. I think they're all tools that you can use to achieve certain outcomes. So yeah. It could be that, you know, you could use a logistic regression and then replace that with a natural language processing algorithm and then replace that with a kind of k-means, yeah, so whatever the kind of, if you have a machine learning textbook, there'll be kind of 20 different techniques, each of which will be interchangeably useful with different accuracies and recalls.
Yeah, it's sort of like a melting pot of technology to produce, you know, the outcome that's required, right?
Exactly.
Brilliant. And listen, we have a number of mutual clients, but again, for the audience at home, could you elaborate a bit on the types of clients that you have and some of the most interesting challenges that you solve for them or that they face?
Yeah, so I think like FSCom, we have a range of clients across like every industry, every geography. And I think initially we had a specific strength in fintech, because that's kind of where I came from. But I think over time we move more towards the kind of large financial institutions themselves, of which are becoming also quite more like fintech in their mentality, attitude, and resourcing. So I think, yeah, we have like 500 clients now. We also have many partners who integrate our platform within their systems as well, so like core banking providers or identity platforms. So really, we want to be the global, omnipresent source of data about risk.
Brilliant. Do you like, is there any way that you can use sort of alerts and things like that, or is it data protection comes up a lot, right? Whenever I'm talking about financial crime, and it all seems a bit daft in that, you know, if somebody like you who are integrating loads of different businesses has intelligence but can't share it because do you know what I mean? Is that a challenge that you're talking about, or?
I think data protection, specifically for money laundering and terrorist financing, you can do things like build these profiles for the specific purpose of the prevention of crime. So I think there's always a legal explicit grounding for doing what we're doing. I think that sharing data between institutions, I think that will become easier over time. I think in the court of public opinion and therefore in the court of law, people will understand that there has to be some sort of trade-off between privacy and prevention of terrorism. And therefore, I think people will choose so long as it's done in a systematic, controlled and logical way, some level of data sharing.
Yeah, I think, you know, let's hope so. Comply Advantage is also, it's expanded like mad, right? Like you're in the US, you're in Singapore. I actually remember meeting your country manager for the US, Brett, in New York a couple of years ago. I think what a lot of founders, I was chatting to you the other day, and I think one of the things is, you know, cracking the US seems to be quite hard for businesses, financial services businesses from here. I wonder, you know, if you could give, like, a lot of founders that maybe are watching this would love to hear, like, what did you wish you knew before going to the US or going to Singapore? Is there any learnings that you could give us as a wider community that you go, yeah, that was, I wish I'd done that, or I did this really well?
I think the same as kind of like most other questions, in terms of fundamentally it comes down to the people that you have. And I think secondly, everything takes time, right? So I think the people, I think the salaries in the US are just like crazily high compared to what you'll experience in the UK. I think, you know, particularly when the dollar is so strong relative to the pound, I think it's very easy to say, actually, that salary, you know, that's like our entire revenue, right? Particularly the earlier stages. And you're like, listen, there's no way I can afford to hire you, right? So I think, and if you want to get someone good, then suddenly you're like paying astronomical amounts. So I guess the question is, when you're a small company, can you afford to pay those astronomical amounts? And probably not, but you should. And then I guess other stuff takes time, in terms of that. There are lots of, you know, in terms of rules-based regulation in the US versus principles-based in Europe, in terms of this focus on transactional pattern analysis rather than, say, entity, and this kind of reliance on SAR filing and CTR filing in the US, which doesn't exist in Europe or elsewhere. That also kind of, you have to build a lot of features just for the US market. And I think, in terms of competition, I think a lot of companies just exist in the US and don't bother going elsewhere because of the sheer market size.
Yeah.
And conversely, it's this kind of black hole, this kind of Death Star that kind of just sucks every company in the world in, as in every company has to launch in the US. And therefore, if you think Europe's competitive or Asia's competitive, then wait till you get to the US, because I think the flip side of the salaries is that everyone wants to launch in the US. And therefore, and companies that are doing well in the US might not bother launching elsewhere. So I think it's going to be a more competitive market because of the sheer size and wealth that is around in the US. So I think that isn't just limited to this market. I think it's a general trend. So I think, that's probably why everyone, you know, like, not everyone is the Beatles or the Rolling Stones who can turn up and then day one and have like this huge fan base in the US, right? So but that obviously is always an aspiration for everyone.
Brilliant. Like, money laundering, terrorist financing, it's a global issue, so it's great to see companies like yourselves like crossing those boundaries and hoping that we can get some sort of level playing field on that. In terms of regulation or regulatory developments, what are the key challenges that you see for 2020 and beyond? I suppose COVID's the most obvious one, albeit not regulatory, but what do you see as the next steps from a regulatory point of view?
Yeah, I think there's two different trends, right? On the one hand, there's the kind of specific kind of COVID reaction and dealing with the fallout there. And then secondly, there's going to be the kind of agendas, the specific agendas of regulators. So I think in terms of COVID fallout, I think in terms of gradually then suddenly, if you look at kind of online shopping trends, I think it was like 17% penetration. Now it's gone up to like 22% based on 8 weeks. So kind of that there's been kind of 5-10 years of progress in the space of like 2 months, right?
Yeah.
That Lenin quote, the kind of Lenin quote where there are weeks where nothing happens, and then there are days when decades happen, right? Like just suddenly everything moves online, and therefore behaviors change, and therefore companies have to understand what the baseline is to detect anomalies against that, and then criminal behaviors changed. Then there's the kind of business as usual in terms of the other trends around international conflict with Trump and Iran and China and Venezuela and trying to enforce oil embargoes, trying to enforce sanctions. And then I guess the most interesting thing aside from those two is just technology and what's possible with technology coming along. So I think still in terms of the central core that we rely on is new innovative algorithms being produced that we can then apply. So I think all that will be fuel for our fire and growth, I think.
Brilliant. It's like you touched on it there, but the immediate like digitization, I suppose, like everyone's using like Teams, Zoom. I think Zoom's user numbers went from 30 million to 300 million or something like that, in, you know, again, in the space of a couple of weeks. How do you see this sort of affecting your business long term? Like, I had the pleasure of going to your summer party last year, and fantastic office, you know, in the middle of London. Can you see us all going back to offices, or do you think it's going to be a bit more remote? Or could you mention just a wee bit on like what you guys are planning for?
So I think like FFCom, we also took out a long lease, right? So I think, but thankfully we have a break clause. So I think like in terms of the raw cost, in terms of like everyone schlepping to the office every day and spending 2 hours there, 2 hours back, and then not talking to anyone, I think that should end, right? I think ideally, yeah. If you go into the office, you're doing it not just to sit there and do nothing. You're doing it, but you're going to talk to people, you're going to build relationships, you're going to actually be physically present and use that as an opportunity to interact. I think at the same time, you will feel the same way in terms of you've had 2 months sitting on your own with limited adrenaline or novelty or excitement, right? So I think at the same time, like, I really hope so, because it's too boring, right?
Yeah, I fundamentally agree. I don't know how many weeks we're in now. I can't be bothered counting, but definitely I had more hair, I think, whenever we started. the final question for me, Charlie, and you know, it's brilliant to have a chat to you. Could you talk a little bit about like your goals for Comply Advantage in the short, medium, and long term? What you're looking to do maybe with the product and with the business?
Yeah, I think for us, and for me, it's my kind of third and final company. I don't want to start another one. It's much easier to double the size of your current company than to like start a new one from scratch, right? Because the whole like working in a garage thing, it's fine, but like I think everyone has their limits, right? So I think like
getting too old for it, Charlie.
Yeah. I really think like what we need to do is just scale what we have now, right? So I think we're still tiny compared to the overall market. So I think and we're investing extremely heavily. We raised $40 million. We're now 250 people. We've built a lot of products, which we think are kind of game changing. So I think fingers crossed. We want to scale, and the goal is still to get to an IPO, right? And then carry on beyond that.
Brilliant. Thanks very much, Charlie, for joining me today. It's genuinely always a pleasure to catch up with you. As from my point of view, sort of seeing it from the outside, the transformation of Comply Advantage from you know basically working out of your garage, to now what is a particularly, you know, it's well-established tech company, and definitely one of the sort of hottest sort of reg techs, probably the hottest reg tech to come out of London. I think it's fascinating to watch. Next week, we are speaking to another sort of reg tech company. We're speaking to John Lord, who is CEO and founder of True Narrative. Okay, until then, thank you very much, everyone.